This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
My Aunt Ida was 3 years younger than my mom. She was serious. She was reflective. She was melancholy. But she was my aunt, and my earliest memories involve her. And I especially remember a Sunday evening at my grandpa's house when we came back to visit from New Glarus, Wisconsin. And I could tell something really important was going to happen because Aunt Ida was, she was attentive and she was ironed and she was ready to go. And she wasn't disappointed. Soon I saw this young man come in through the summer kitchen door, and he was kind of wiry and short, and I remember he had black hair and he had kind of red cheeks, and he was wearing his poison green shirt. And he was there to take Aunt Ida to the singing for their first date. I was just a little kid. I was about 3 years old, but I knew something really important was going on there. So not that long after we got back home, we got a letter. And it was an invitation to come to Danny and Ida's wedding. And I remember being there. I was just a little guy, but the reception was just everything I could ask for. There was food. I was unsupervised. Some of the older boys were taking the little BB-sized decorations off the stuff and just winging them at each other, and they go ting, 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 ting on the hardwood floor, and I remember crawling around and picking them up because they had a greenish tint to them and putting them in my pocket to take home. It was wonderful. Well, that was 1963. And in 1965, the Mennonites found us. Now, my dad was thrilled. He heard his first sermon about grace. And he also realized that it looked like you could farm with tractor and also go to heaven. And you have to understand, he hated horses. He was not a very good Amishman from that point of view. And so he was thrilled. My mom was more, maybe not. But you know, there were good reasons and bad, and they made the decision. But what I remember best about all this is coming back to visit the aunties and the uncles. And the aunties were tearful, and the uncles were stern, and the grandparents were very concerned about my parents' choice. And I remember when we left, my dad, he's conflict avoidance, he I think if it would have been up to him, that would have been the last visit. We'd stay with our new friends, and that would be okay. We'd do without relatives. But I remember my mom saying, they are our kin. And we're going to visit them twice a year, whether they like it or not. And we did. And that's why I grew up knowing my 11 aunts and uncles and their partners and my 79 of my 81 Utsi first cousins. Now, Aunt Ida and Uncle Danny, and Uncle Danny was in the lot, and he was ordained as a deacon not long after they married. And so he had to be a good example. And so they did not want to get used to what my mom and dad decided to do. And they were also concerned about other things, and they ended up moving way up to northern Wisconsin, near Augusta, and setting up in the Amish community there. And we tried to visit once. And my mom sent the letter and said, you know, we're coming through, we're coming to you, and we'd like to visit, and gave the day. And when we arrived, I remember nobody was home. So we kind of looked around, and then we, you know, checked with the neighbors and found out, well, you know, they might be up at one of the children's places. And so we meandered through the community, and we finally found Aunt Ida and Uncle Denny. And they were helping clean up something at somebody's house there. We got the message. But we did visit, because we were there anyway, and we looked at the hardscrabble little farm that cousin Ben had with his wife and his little kids, and we looked at his band mill, and we talked a little bit about quarter sawn, you know, walnut furniture lumber, and we went back home, and years passed, and we just didn't know much about those cousins, except what we read in the budget. Now, you have to understand that the budget is kind of like an Amish Facebook. And my mom reads it from cover to cover. She has ever since I can remember. And so she keeps track of an enormous number of followers. And, because she's kind of a leader. She writes, too. And so we read in there, and we read that, Danny's bought a farm. They finally apparently saved up enough money for that. And then we saw that they had, the Holsteins had chronic wasting disease. Oh my, you know, and they had to sell them all. And then one by one we noticed that the children were getting married. They were just names, I didn't know them. But we were never invited. We did read that Eli, after he was married, he still liked to go hunting, fell out of his tree stand. He was 40 feet up in an oak tree, fell asleep. And they didn't find him till about noon. He was dragging himself out of the woods, broke his ankle, had like 4 broken ribs, slashed his forearm on a broadhead. And that was pretty serious. But what we noticed then later is Uncle Dave out in St. Ignatius, he wrote in his piece in the budget, he said, you know, you ought to come out here and hunt whitetail. Out here, you don't have to climb up in trees. They walk around right on the ground. The only place where we could meet Uncle Danny and Aunt Ida was at funerals. And there weren't very many funerals through those years, but then in about 2012, in June, John's Harley died. He was 44 years old. He lived in southern Iowa, and he left a grieving wife, Frida, and he left 9 children, ages 3 to 19, and it was terribly sad. He fought cancer. He was down in Tijuana and, got the treatment he thought he should have, and he lost. And so we all gathered to grieve and to bury. And I remember sitting on a long, hard wooden bench in the new machine shed, listening to Joseph Wagler, the minister, in his big voice, there weren't any speakers, telling us to trust in God and to turn our faces towards eternity. The Bloomfield ladies fed all 1,200 of us after that sermon and that burial was over. And then we gathered in the front yard to power visit. That's what you do in Amish funerals. And I found Uncle Danny. And I started talking with him. There I was holding my plate with the food on it, and so was he. And I asked him, I said, you know, I heard that you had an offer, sell your farm, and you turned it down. Tell me about that. And he kind of, yeah, I did indeed. And I said, what's the deal? And he said, well, this is how it worked. The neighbors drilled a well. The well driller noticed that there was unusual sand coming up. And not long after that, an agent came and asked to drill a test well on my farm. And they drilled, and then he came out and said, there's special sand under your farm, and we want to buy it. I said, what kind of special sand? And so Uncle Denny gave me a little lesson. He said, well, this is the way it works. The scientists say there were glaciers, and they moved down from Canada, and they rolled rocks in front of them and made very round little bits of sand. And they rolled along for miles and miles, and then where the glacier stopped and receded, an esker was left, kind of a curvy sort of bank of this special marble-like sand, very small bits. And that's used in fracking, in hydraulic fracking, when people drill wells to put, to get crude oil out. This is pumped down with other things, and it fills the cracks, and the crude oil can move out through the round sand in a way that it can't with normal sand, which is pyramid-shaped. So I said, wow, that's interesting. So what happened? And he said, well, the man did a survey, and he came to me and he said, you know, we would like to buy the sand. We have to take 35 feet of the topsoil and the subsoil off, but we'll put it back, and then you can have your farm again when we're done. So I said, really? And how much was he going to give you? Well, he said $15 million would be my share. Wow. What did you do? He said, well, that's more money than I could spend in my lifetime. And I remembered that he'd had, you know, the prostate cancer, and that he hadn't done well, and he had the external bladder, and, you know, he was thinking, I'm mortal. So he told the man, I got to meet with my children because they're going to help me spend this money. Well, what did you decide? Well, 11 of them came together. 11 of my children live around me in the hills there. And we had a conference. And we talked about that. And we realized that kind of money, not one of us would have to work again a day in our life. And we decided that wouldn't be good for our spiritual life. Well, my mouth kind of hung open a little bit there. Wow. What did the agent say? Well, he was surprised when I told him we're not selling. And he looked at me, and then he got this, like, gleam in his eyes. Oh, well, how about $17 million? And I said, no, that would be worse. He left shaking his head. He didn't know what to make of Uncle Danny. Well, that intrigued me. But about that time, Jonathan, who was 10, and Maria, his sister, and Jason, who was 15, they were all Harley's sons, whom we just buried that day. They came up and said, Leroy, cousin Leroy, tell us stories. Please tell us Taillebone. And I said, I can't. It's the day we buried your father. And they said, it's the saddest day we've ever had. We need some joy in our life. So I said, I'll think of something appropriate. Gather with your siblings and some friends in 10 minutes. And so we did, in the front yard, right in the middle of everything, with some benches. There they were. And I started telling them stories, because you cannot deny the child who's lost their father a wish like that. And so I told them some stories, and then I kind of looked up and was like, oh, all their friends and their parents' friends were standing around listening. And so I kept on talking, but I kind of looked, and pretty soon at the back corner over here, I saw Aunt Ida, and she was working her way over, and she was peering down to see what was going on. And then I saw my mom, and she was working her way over. She was right next to Aunt Ida. And then Aunt Ida looked up and down, and she said something. And then my mom said something, and pretty soon they were talking, and then pretty soon that was all over. And I kept on talking, and then when I was done, after a while, I got over to my mom and said, what was going on over there? She said, well, Aunt Ida spotted me, looked me up and down, and said, why are you wearing such a long dress? And I didn't know what to say, so I just said, well, I guess I'm repenting for my sins. Oh. And then she said, where did Leroy learn to tell stories like that? And before I could answer, she said, I know. He learned that when he went to school, didn't he? And my mom wasn't sure what was coming next, but then Aunt Ida said, you know, I really want my boys to hear that story that Leroy just said. Do you think if I invited him up for supper sometime, and then I invited, you know, the boys home, would he tell that story and some other ones to them? And my mom, she rose to that occasion. She became my agent right there. And she said, yes, yes, indeed, he would do that. And you know, the first weekend in October would be a great weekend for us to come up. And so she got everything down, and I decided that was a pretty good deal. That would be worth it to try that. And so in October, there we were, making our way up. We Amished our way all the way up to northern Wisconsin. And when we got there, we got in early a little bit, and Aunt Ida took us on a walk. And we went out around the barn and out back, and we saw that Danny really had a nice place there. And way out back in the horse pasture, I saw a pile of sand, and I went over there and looked at that, and it was the test well sand. And the sand was kind of round. It wasn't very obvious, but it was. And when we were walking back, we saw this tree, this maple tree. I saw this maple tree right in the front yard, and it had branches that kind of went around like this and grew back into the trunk in a heart shape. And it's like, Aunt Ida, what is that all about? Oh, she said, that was Denny. You know, when he went in to do that second surgery, he thought he was going to die. And so before he did that, he drilled two holes and he trained those branches down there. So they grow in there. And he told me, you know, if I don't come back from the hospital, you can look at this tree and you can think of me once in a while. Yeah, he's kind of sentimental. Well, we went on in. And one of the daughters was home, and they had fixed a beautiful meal. It was Amish comfort food. We had creamy mashed potatoes, and we had chicken noodles to put on top of that. We had homemade applesauce, and we had canned green beans. And there was pudding. There was date pudding. And that was just the first round. And then we had angel food cake with strawberries, canned strawberries on it for dessert, and real cream and a lot of it. And you know, it was really obvious. There was about 2 feet between the table where my mom and my dad and I sat and the table where Denny and Ida and the daughter and her family sat. But it was not that far apart that we couldn't feel love coming back and forth in our conversation and in the food and in what we did. And before we were finished with our dessert, buggy wheels started scritching through the gravel, and 11 buggies showed up, and cousins poured out, and cousins' children, and people I barely recognized. And a lot of them were kind of wiry and skinny, and they had black hair and red cheeks and kind of a mischievous twinkle in their eyes. And I was so pleased. And they gathered in the big living room all around the edges, and we had 3 5-gallon tins of popcorn. And we proceeded to eat 2 of them, and the children strewed the 3rd one all over the hardwood floor. And I told stories after we had introductions. And it was wonderful. They listened and they were amazed. And children moved around. And this one child caught my attention. He was about 2 years old. It was a boy because he had a haircut, black hair, red cheeks, and a poison green dress on. That's what you do. This is old, you know, it's the way I spent the first 2 years of my life, in a dress. Once you're out of diapers, then you can wear breeches if you're a boy. He was still in diapers, and he'd see something and zoom, he'd go to it. And You couldn't do anything about it. I was, you know, paused, and there's this older little girl, and she was gagging. And we looked over there, and he was throttling her with her covering strings because he wanted her toy. And an adult nearby just reached over and just undid his fingers and redirected him over there in a way that told me they all had done that before. He was a problem, definitely a problem. He was after my stuff, my juggling balls, so I ended up holding him right here, and I told stories with this hand for the rest of the evening. He liked that. He was moving around center of attention. Well, as we cleaned up after everybody was leaving, all that popcorn, and we're putting the toys away, Uncle Denny said, "Leroy, I want to show you something." And he came over, and he showed me this beautiful china cabinet that he had built for Aunt Ida. And it looked wonderful and normal, and then he opened the doors at the bottom, opened wide open, and the thing was stacked brimful of nicely split firewood for the kitchen stove. And I was like, "Wow, never saw that before. How'd you do that?" Well, he said, I thought, while I was at it, I'd just cut a hole in the floor right under there, and it's kind of built in there. And then I made a wood box that fits right in there, and I have wheels on it and a handle, and then I put a wooden pulley and a lag bolt right into a stud, and I put one of those pulling straps on it, and I have a crank in the basement, and I can crank that thing, and then I can roll the wood box all the way over, get wood in it, fill it up, bring it back, and hoist it up, and there's no mess, and I've, you know, Aunt Ida has her wood right there for me. It was ingenious. And I said, "How did you figure that out?" Well, he said, "By trial and error." The first time, I filled it right up on the first box, and I was cranking it up there, and apparently the weight flexed the box, and it wouldn't fit through the hole. But I thought I'd just crank really hard. And all of a sudden, the handle ripped right out of that box, and that whole load of wood fell all the way to the floor, made a terrible noise, totaled the wood box. Wheels fell off. Well, what'd you do then? Well, I just thought, while I'm down here, I'll just lie down, foot of the stairs, and hold real still. What happened then? Well, you know, Aunt Ida was up in the kitchen. She heard all that. Pretty soon she said, "Denny." I didn't say anything. And she said, "Denny." I didn't say anything then. And then she stomped over to the top of the stairs, and she looked down. She saw me lying there. What'd she do then? She said, "Denny, if you're not hurt, get up here right now." And then I knew that he'd been tricking and teasing my aunt probably their entire married life. It was quite a revelation. Well, we spent the night there, and on our way home in our little black van, as we worked our way down County Road R towards La Crosse and the Mississippi River Bridge, and we're heading home again to Kansas. That's not God speaking, is it? I thought about all the amazing things I had learned that evening about Uncle Denny and Aunt Ida. I realized that this joyless and severe, arm's-length Denny was really quite complex, that he had humor, that he had love and grace mixed in with mischief. They told me that it was the Gingrich thing to do that, and that little green boy, he just got the gene, and there was nothing to do about it. He was going to be difficult his whole life. And I thought about Denny and how he turned down all that money. I grew up the way Denny did, thinking a lot about money because we never seemed to quite have enough of it. And I was just astonished to think of him choosing to live with the children of God rather than to enjoy the wealth of Egypt. There it was. It was a huge temptation. I really had to admire Denny's choice. Well,
My mom was thinking, and we were talking, and all of a sudden she said, 49. 49. My mom counts stuff. She can't help it. She's always counting everything. If somebody's missing, she knows it immediately. In a big room, it's strange, but that's the way it is. She said, 49. That's how many years it's been since we had an invitation to eat with my sister, Ida. 49 years is a long time. But I tell you, it was worth it. It made it really special. We were thankful, and we were so glad that we could live to experience that day. You know, our projects, sometimes we think a year is a long time. But in God's time, no. We're working on big projects, and sometimes they take a really long time. So I encourage you, be patient. And I also encourage you, if you can't go all the way across the world to be a missionary, think about my Uncle Danny, who didn't go very far in his life. But he was a missionary to his neighbors and to his church. Thank you so much for your attention.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.